Chapter 6, The Dress Rehearsal.
The control of information is something the elite always does, particularly in a despotic form of government. Information, knowledge, is power. If you can control information, you can control the people. Quote by Tom Clancy.
October 18, 2019. The Pier Hotel, New York. On behalf of our center and our partners, the World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, I'd like to extend a very warm welcome to our audience here in New York, as well as our larger virtual audience participating online today. The goal of the Event 201 exercise is to illustrate the potential consequences of a pandemic and the kinds of societal and economic challenges it would pose.
It's beyond macabre in retrospect. Leaders of multi-million dollar companies and government agencies had gathered at one of Manhattan's most luxurious properties to play act their way through a global pandemic that killed thousands. One by one, they would opine at length about how they would handle such a global crisis, only to pat one another on the back at the end for saving the world, at least for pretend.
The Event 201 scenario is fictional, but it's based on public health principles, epidemiological modeling, an assessment of past outbreaks, the speaker explained. In other words, we've created a pandemic that could realistically occur. The simulation kicked off with a well-produced but fake news video.
It began in healthy-looking pigs, a polished female newscaster announced solemnly, over B-roll of a writhing herd. Months, perhaps years ago, a new coronavirus spread silently. Infected people got a respiratory illness with symptoms ranging from mild, flu-like symptoms to severe pneumonia.
The voiceover continued as chilling images were projected on the screen at the front of the room. The sickest required intensive care. Many died. At first, the spread was limited to those with close contacts, but now it's spreading rapidly throughout local communities. International travel helped the illness hop borders, the newsreel explained, until it was a full-scale global pandemic. The simulation predicted the spread of conspiracy theories, as the elite panel discussed the most effective ways to prevent the flow of public disinformation. Censorship was rampant as millions clamored for a vaccine, even one that would be experimental and not fully tested. Hospitals were overflowing, and masks and gloves were scarce. Event 201 took place in October 2019, 5 months before the COVID-19 was declared a pandemic. An event of this complexity and magnitude would take months to write, prep, and produce, placing its date of conceptualization at least 1 year prior to the actual pandemic. The question that arises for anyone paying close enough attention is, if this collection of wealthy and powerful knew that far in advance exactly what would be needed and in short supply, why did they wait till the actual pandemic to begin addressing those critical details?
Mysteriously, while Event 201 was hosted by Johns Hopkins University, the World Economic Forum, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, it was paid for by Open Philanthropy, an opaque charity run by Facebook co-founder Dustin Moskovitz. An investor in Chinese CRISPR technology company Sherlock Biosciences, Dustin had considerable gain from an epidemic that would get his technology authorized under Emergency Use Authorization, EUA. In fact, that's what wound up happening.
All of the participants described the woeful lack of personal protection equipment, or PPE, and other disaster resources, but Gizmodo zeroed in on what was perhaps an even bigger threat: censorship and misinformation regarding the pandemic. Social media outlets also fanned the flames by allowing trolls and even governments to spread disinformation about the fictitious virus, such as blaming foreigners for the problem, author Ed Cara wrote. That in turn made people even less likely to trust public health experts. Eric Toner, project director of Event 201, told Cara, "We're seeing right now with recent outbreaks like Ebola that social media plays a big role, both positively and negatively. It's how many people get their news now, but it's also how rumors and misinformation get propagated." For the power players, that was a crucial takeaway. even more than stockpiling PPE, which they didn't ever do, was ensuring control of the sources of information.
Lockdowns would make that ever more vital, Dr. Martin explained.
If you can keep people from assembling, guess what they're not talking about? They're not talking about the issues of the campaign. If you keep people in their homes, the only source of information you can have is what you curate for them. Now I know how to target my electorate. They're in the only place I allow them to be, being fed the only message I'm allowing them to hear through a media I control.
On March 2nd, 2021, Zosimo T. Literatis of Yahoo News did what journalists used to do, research. His journey into the rabbit hole began with a simple question. Last year, the documentary Plandemic Indoctrination had hit social media, facing criticisms of falsehood and outright attacks from the print and digital media. Its arguments were convincing and evidence apparently strong. Some critiques even claimed it as disinformation. Of course, the critiques could be true. However, what if they were wrong? Mr. Literatis followed up with a series of reports on Plandemic Indoctrination, April 20th, May 4th, and June 1st of 2021. To his credit, he personally reviewed the key patents and points revealed by Dr. Martin. In the end, Mr. Literatis was unable to find anything that justified the debunked label the movie had been given by critics. In his June 1st article, Zosimo T. Literatis wrote, "Most media outlets label the film content as a conspiracy theory, which supposedly promotes misinformation, particularly of the COVID-19 pandemic. What falls flat in the claim of conspiracy theory and misinformation is the mysterious and the impeccable timing of the October 18, 2019 scripted simulation in Event 201, which described closely the COVID-19 pandemic that erupted in China in December 2019, 3 months later. It must be noted that the China declaration of the COVID-19 breakout could have been delayed by state censorship until the event could not be hidden from the world in December 2019. This means that the breakout could have occurred a few months earlier. The big question that was never answered: did the conveners of the October 2019 Event 201 know what was happening in China long before the simulation event took place? Event 201 wasn't, however, the only exercise of its kind. In the run-up to coronavirus, scores of the world elite were drafting various versions of the same event. The World at Risk scenario was released a month before Event 201 in September 2019. The World at Risk scenario was drafted by an organization called the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, which is a part of the World Health Organization. Board members for the GPMB include Dr. Anthony Fauci, Dr. Christopher J. Elias, the president of the Global Development Division of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and George Fu Gao, the director of the nonprofit Chinese Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is largely funded by the American CDC. According to The Who, the report provided a snapshot of the world's ability to prevent and contain a serious global health threat. More important, the group recommended 7 urgent priority actions leaders must take to prepare across 5 areas, The Who explained, including leadership, building multi-sectoral country systems, research and development, financing, and robust international coordination. Specifically, they recommended that by September 2020, global leaders should complete 2 global pandemic preparedness exercises, such as Event 201. One, they noted, should be focused on the release of a respiratory pathogen. Back in January 2017, Dr. Fauci had issued a warning to the sitting president. In a pandemic preparedness forum at Georgetown, he said, there was no doubt Trump would face a surprise pandemic before the end of his term. Indeed, just over 3 years later, Dr. Fauci would preside over one. Dr. Martin explained how he and his research team noticed the early signs that the world was preparing for a pandemic event. and that they seemed to know just what disease would cause it.
My systems flagged anomalies when I started seeing nonprofits and corporations and cover financing for coronavirus programs in the late summer and fall of 2019. Our first red flag came out when we read the World at Risk scenario in September 2019.
As he watched, the story they had drafted began to come true.
Every single thing that you have seen play out in front of your eyes, all of them laid out in their tabletop exercise. Was it really just a coincidence? I was stunned by the synergies, which fact checkers have said has nothing to do with the coronavirus outbreak. Just happenstance. This is that wonderful universe of improbabilities where events just co-emerge and then nature conveniently backs itself into our architecture. That's the scenario we're supposed to accept. Brilliant.
1 year prior to Event 201, the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security brought together many of the same sponsors, hosts, and actors to produce a tabletop pandemic simulation for a fictional virus they branded Clade X. At the time, that was the third pandemic play that they had put on. The first, Dark Winter, was held in 2001, just a few months before 9/11. Its timing, just a few months before 9/11, made its terrifying outcome the near-complete breakdown of government and civil society, deeply resonate. Nicola Twilley, a reporter for The New Yorker who watched the exercise, wrote, Dark Winter is credited, in part, with spurring George W. Bush to pass Directive 51, a largely classified plan to ensure the continuity of government in the event of a catastrophic emergency. Though much of that document was classified, the sections that were made public suggested that the president could assume nearly authoritarian powers, including instituting martial law. In execution, we now know it included warrantless wiretapping of American citizens, torture of perceived enemies, and more. Authoritarian response overall was the outcome of a pandemic preparedness exercise released way back in 2010 by the Rockefeller Foundation. The 54-page document called Scenarios for the Future of Technology and International Development features the pandemic scenario lockstep, a world of tighter top-down government control and authoritarian leadership with limited innovation and growing citizen pushback. In the Clade X exercise, they explored how that authoritarian leadership could actually exert itself at the level of the states. As the exercise unfolded, governors imposed lockdowns and travel bans on Americans from other states, just like what happened with the real COVID-19. In the exercise, as in reality, there was confusion as different states set different guidelines and the federal government declined to intercede. In a serious outbreak, there will be federalism issues, Tom Inglesby, then the director of the Center for Health Security at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, said. They may be manageable, they may not be. According to The New Yorker's Twilley, even within the artificial confines of the simulation, there was a lack of leadership. Everyone agreed that the president had the final word on everything in general, but nobody seemed to be responsible for America's outbreak response specifically. Politician Tom Daschle, a former senator from South Dakota, who was playing the Senate majority leader during the exercise, complained, We're 5 months into this crisis, and I still can't tell you who's in charge. Twilley wrote, Ironically, just a couple of days earlier, the person to whom this responsibility would have fallen in real life, Rear Admiral Tim Zimmer, had been removed from his position as the head of global health security on the White House's National Security Council. This all but ensured that the pandemic fantasy of Clade X chaos would turn into reality, allowing big pharma and big business to step into the power vacuum that the government had created. Indeed, by the time that the COVID-19 outbreak flared up, Zimmer had not been replaced. With a lack of leadership at a federal level and state governments focused on corralling their own citizens, who could oversee the global response to a medical disaster? The World Health Organization was established in 1948, specifically for that cause. A specialized agency of the United Nations, its stated goal is the attainment of all peoples of the highest possible health. In practice, that looks a lot like what the CDC does in the United States, issuing guidelines, tracking epidemics, and keeping a pulse on public health. In reality, it faces the same conflicts of interest as many other organizations because it needs outside funds to function. Although the WHO is the institution granted exclusive power to guide and protect the health and wellness of humanity, it is sustained by private donations, the bulk of which are made by pharmaceutical and biotech corporations who have a vested financial interest in the organization's support. For the 2018-2019 budget cycle, for example, the biggest volunteer donations from organizations, as opposed to the fees assessed from member states, were as follows. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated $531 million. Gavi, Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, founded by Bill and Melinda Gates, donated $371 million. Rotary International, a partner of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for more than a decade, donated $143 million. The World Bank, a partner of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation since 2018, donated $133 million. The European Commission, the executive branch of the EU, which received over $45 million in donations from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in 2019, donated $131 million. National Philanthropic Trust, recipient of millions of dollars in grants from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, donated $108 million. As early as 2017, the world was starting to take notice of how Bill Gates, a man, as noted earlier, with no medical training, was beginning to insert himself into the world's most powerful international health organizations. That year, on the eve of the appointment of a new WHO director, Politico reported, "The software mogul's sway over the World Health Organization spurs criticism about misplaced priorities and undue influence." One of the candidates for the director position was former Ethiopian health minister, Tedros Ghebreyesus. If elected, he would be the first director of the WHO who wasn't also a doctor. Last year, a French diplomat suggested that Gates also support Tedros, Politico added, having funded health programs in his country when he was health minister. The Gates Foundation denied it, telling Politico that the foundation cannot take a position given that it is not a voting member country and thus has to remain neutral. Still, was it any surprise that Tedros emerged victorious? With Gates behind him, as well as other powerful allies including the Clinton Global Initiative and the Chinese Communist Party, he was a shoo-in. The fact that he wasn't even a doctor was easily ignored. More disturbingly, however, were some of the scandals in his past that were quietly swept under the rug. Prior to his appointment, Tedros was a high-ranking member of the Tigray People's Liberation Front in Ethiopia, a brutal and corrupt political group responsible for crimes against humanity, including bombings, kidnappings, tortures, and killings. He also was accused of helping to cover up three different cholera epidemics in the African nation that occurred under his leadership as health minister. When the first cholera outbreak occurred, the disease was reclassified as acute watery diarrhea, or AWD. Critics said this was done to downplay the outbreak and prevent international concern. In actuality, it did little more than prevent the flow of foreign aid and the implementation of a vaccine, both of which would have required the government to classify the disease specifically as cholera. Ultimately, critics said, his citizens died to prevent his own embarrassment. Aghast, a group of American doctors wrote a letter to Tedros pleading him to reconsider in 2017.
"Your silence about what is clearly a massive cholera epidemic in Sudan daily becomes more reprehensible," they wrote. "The inevitable history that will be written of this cholera epidemic will surely cast you in an unforgiving light."
As reported in May 2020 by the Eurasia Review, they blasted him for being fully complicit in the terrible suffering and dying that continues to spread in East Africa. None of that made it to the resume that Tedros submitted to the WHO for his consideration. To this day, he is still known in some circles as Dr. Cover-Up, a man who, one think tank claimed, allegedly personifies the erosion in impartiality and rectitude expected from such a storied body.
We are living in a time where leadership, unfortunately, is compromised. By that I mean that individuals are placed in power for their ability to be influenced, not their merits of leadership. Nothing could be clearer than the leadership of the World Health Organization. The true leaders of the world are the ones doing the influencing, the ones with the money to fund such organizations. The interlocking directorates of the World Health Organization, the CDC, the NIAID, or the organizations that are the philanthropic cover organizations that fund them.
Such philanthropic cover organizations include Gavi, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's pro-vaccine spinoff, for example. Presently, there are more than 1,300 patents issued and held by organizations that are either recipients of funding from or otherwise linked to those groups. It doesn't take much digging to find the fingerprints of Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci on almost all medical research and innovation today. There's Sherlock Biosciences, for example, which creates diagnostic tests and is heavily funded by the Gates Foundation. And EcoHealth Alliance, a former partner of the Wuhan Virology Lab. The Alliance received funding from the NIH and had a director of the Gates Foundation on its board of scientific advisors. Moderna, one of the companies that led the push for the COVID-19 vaccine, has received millions in grants from the Gates Foundation and partnered with NIH and NIAID for their vaccine trials. It's a very incestuous web. Even if we don't believe that there is malice in the minds of those pulling the strings, we should at least be aware of how all of those strings are tangled. For most of our history, we actively tried to prevent such massive intermingling of corporate power. Indeed, there was a time when pharmaceutical CEOs could be jailed for knowingly selling a dangerous product or covering up the evidence of its negative effects on public health. Today, they simply get a slap on the wrist in the form of a fine. In just one recent and egregious example, see the Sacklers, the family behind Purdue Pharma, the makers of OxyContin. Largely credited with causing the American opioid epidemic that killed nearly 500,000 people, the Sacklers are alleged to have knowingly pushed their highly addictive drug simply to benefit their bottom line. After extensive public outrage, Purdue Pharma pleaded guilty to criminal charges related to OxyContin. Instead of jail time for executives, Purdue Pharma was hit with a seven-figure fine. The Sacklers themselves agreed to pay $225 million, roughly one quarter of 1 year's revenue from the drug, and 8% of the company's yearly revenue overall. That works out to about $450 per American who died during the height of the opioid epidemic. For many, fines are just the cost of doing business in the pharmaceutical industry. According to Dr. Martin, however, it's much more serious.
If you have conflicts of interest in funding and in the decision-making and the inside knowledge that you have between competing or competitor organizations, that is a violation of the antitrust laws of the United States. These are federal crimes.